So hey guys, are you frustrated with where you're at right now? Maybe stunted in your progress? Well, if you are, I want to recommend a place for you to go called Growth Day. Growthday.com/ed. It is the number one personal development app on the planet. It's got all kinds of high performance techniques in there, courses, accountability, journaling, live speeches from some of the top influencers in the world, including me. It's an overall environment to change your life. Growthday.com/ed.
This is the Ed Milet Show.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. So I'm so excited about today. This gentleman that we're going to visit with, to me, he may be the most fascinating athlete of my lifetime. He's a compelling figure. He's an interesting man. I'd call him, you know, on the surface, he's a very complex person. We'll see today when we talk with him. He's also, I would tell you, I think the most gifted tennis player that I've ever seen. Talented or gifted, but between the two, he can do things on a tennis court that almost no one who has ever lived has been able to do. And he's going to be an interesting conversation today about success, about what really matters, mental health, performing under pressure, humility. I think you're going to see a side to him today if you're familiar with him that you've never seen before. Mutual friends of ours rave about him just as a human being. So Nick Kyrgios, welcome to the show.
I appreciate that, Ed. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So am I, man. So let's look at tennis just real quick. Although I don't want to spend a lot of time today talking about tennis. I want to talk about you as a person, but I've watched you over the years and probably like a lot of people, sometimes you frustrate me, if I can be candid, because I see this immensely talented and gifted man. And then sometimes, I don't know if you feel this way, but there's been times where, and by the way, I root for you in every match you're in, literally every match you're in. I find myself, I don't care if it's against Djokovic, Nadal, whoever it is, I root for you. But sometimes I wonder if you're even rooting for yourself when you're out there. Is that a fair question to ask you?
Yeah, I think, look, I've always had a bit of a love-hate relationship with tennis. I played basketball when I was a kid as well, and that was my true passion. And at 14, obviously picked the tennis kind of journey. My parents pushed me heavily towards tennis. So I guess I never really completely loved the sport and I didn't really have passion for it. So every time I kind of stepped out there, it was always a battle of being completely vulnerable and going out there and giving my best effort all the time. Even though I'm a really sick obsession and I hate losing and I'm a true competitor, that's for sure. But tennis has always been not even my true passion. So that's been a hard struggle my whole career as well.
What about now that you're injured? You're telling me you're in a tough rehab right now. Mm-hmm. Has distance made your heart grow fonder, or has this distance told you, you know what, I really like my life away from the game and the things I'm enjoying, not having to deal with the pressure, the expectations, the haters, the whatever it is? Where are you at now?
I still deal with the haters daily. It's like I've had two surgeries now in a year, and as an athlete, it's incredibly hard because rehab's not a fun place to be. You know, it's almost harder on a day-to-day basis than it is playing and when you're healthy. You know, you got to do two sessions a day, two gym sessions a day, got to make sure your diet's good. You got to just be like really knuckling down to getting back to that full health. But in a way, it's been, you know, a really crucial time for I think just as a human outside of tennis, because I was from Australia and I was traveling 6-7 months a year away from my family. Because in Australia, we have barely any tournaments here. So the rest of the tour is always overseas. So I guess now being injured, it's given me to really spend that quality time with my family. I felt like I hadn't seen them in the last 10 years of my life because I was always traveling, playing and just grinding, I guess. So now it's been good to be back home and spending time with them and just being able to build so many other things off the court as well, which I think is so crucial for an athlete. Athletes struggle with that so much because they don't know what else to do after they finish. So, that's been really a challenge for me too, but I've fallen in love with so many things outside of the sport of tennis. And just like having a conversation with you, this would never have come if I wasn't injured as well. So I know it's all a bonus and I just got to change my perspective on it all.
Do you want to come back and play?
For sure. You know, I definitely think I've got so much more to give, and I've got millions of fans out there who want me to go out there and play and try and take it to these, I guess, gods of the sport like Djokovic, like a normal guy like me, like that will go out there and give these guys a good run. I think, you know, that's special. And I think my body's got a little bit left, and I feel like I've still got fire in the belly. You know, I've been putting in some hard yards the last month, so I definitely feel like I'll be back. And I just, yeah, I think I just don't want my fans and everyone to expect, you know, 5 more years of this circus that takes the court.
Yeah. I want you to tell us about top level athletics that we wouldn't know. So I'm always fascinated. You're going out before a final at Wimbledon, and it's you and Djokovic in the tunnel. You're both standing there. It's the it's the day of. It's a match against Nadal or just another really great player. So I mean, people don't realize this. Look, there's tennis, there's junior tennis, there's high school tennis, there's college tennis, then there's all these levels of tennis, then there's professional tennis, then there's the majors, then there's, you know, getting to the quarterfinals, then there's getting to the semifinals. You're talking about on spinning planet Earth.
Yep.
Really, 2, 3, 4 human beings experience this at every tournament, right? Yep. What would we not know about that, Nick? Like when you're back there in the tunnel and it's you and Djokovic or warming up, tell us something we don't know about the highest level that might surprise us or some insights into the top of the top.
So tennis is probably the only sport in the world that, so basically me and Djokovic, we were, Wimbledon's a little bit different. So let me say the US Open. So in New York, so I'm playing Daniil Medvedev. He's the number one player at the world at the time. And he's a reigning US Open champion. So 10 minutes before we walk out to the center court, Arthur Ashe Stadium, I think it holds like, I don't know, something crazy, 60,000 or something. So in front, 5 minutes before we're about to walk out and play in front of all those people and millions worldwide watching, me and this guy, my opponent, could be Djokovic, could be Rafa, we're all in the same locker room. So I shower next to these guys. Like we're in the same locker room and we eat next to each other. And then we have to go out and play against each other for 4.5 hours. And then after we finish, we come back into the same locker room and we sit next to each other. It's like unheard of in sport. Like everyone has separate locker rooms, like NBA, NFL, NHL. They'll have separate locker rooms. You don't see the person like hours before. I literally see these guys for hours and hours before the match. And we're walking out together and we walk back. It's crazy.
Wow, I never knew that. Like literally, I saw you in the tunnel, but I did not know that.
No. We don't have separate locker rooms. We're all in the same locker room. We all shower together. We all eat together. It's f-ing crazy.
Whoa. So what's that like? Like are certain guys playing some little bit mental warfare in there? Like they're keeping their distance or really?
Yeah, some people are really quiet in there and some people just keep their distance. Like me, I'm always in the locker room like with like a couple of my mates, like me and Novak or me and Andy Murray. Like I'll always be quite like a joker in the locker room and stuff. So people could look at that as like mental warfare too, like me just like clowning around. But there are definitely some people in there who don't give away anything, like they get their business done and just leave. But yeah, I mean, before Wimbledon, me and Novak just walked out of the locker room together. We walked through the tunnel. There's the royal families on the left. Like there's guards there on the right. And I'm walking in front of Novak and I'm like a kid from Canberra who was suicidal, who was struggling with his own confidence, his own identity, is now playing in front of the royal family, walking in front of Novak to the biggest stage in world tennis. And I was like, this is nuts. And then the doors like slowly open, every blade of grass is even. And I'm like, Nick Kyrgios isn't supposed to be here.
Wow. Damn, that's cool nuts. Right there, man. That's super cool. Yeah, when you're, I'm really glad I asked you that. Let me ask you this. What if you don't like the guy? There's got to be a guy you don't like. Like if you're back there, it's just like.
Yeah. I mean, there's heaps of people that I didn't get along with great in the locker room and we didn't like each other at all. But I shower next to that guy and I eat with that guy and we just go out on court and compete for 4 hours.
When you're in a match and you're starting to wear a dude out, right? Can you feel it? Like you feel like he's losing it. Has there been a time like that? You have to say who if you don't want to, but like, can you begin to feel he's losing his will. I'm outwilling this dude right now. I'm too much for this dude right now. Does that happen? Can you feel it?
Yeah. In Grand Slam tennis, I mean, it's best of 5 sets, obviously. So you can literally, my longest match I've ever played is 4 hours and 58 minutes. Like absolute battle in down in Australia. But yeah, you can, I think mentally, when you're out there for that long on your own, you got no teammates, you got nothing. You have some serious conversations with yourself, you know, on the change events. Like it's a mental warfare. Usually people have signs physically in that long that they're starting to kind of slow down a bit. I've played a couple top people in five sets, and I look at them and I look at them, and they're looking at their team and they know that they're physically starting to slow down. But I mean, the lesson I learned physically was early. I was 19 and I was playing the Australian Open, and I was one set away from winning, and I wasn't physically conditioned yet to win these long matches. And I full my quads started cramping, my whole leg started cramping up, and I actually wasn't able to play. And I ended up losing the match. And I was like, that was the conversation I had. I'm like, I'm never gonna ever lose a match again because I'm physically not ready to win these long matches. So it starts with, if you're physically in good shape, I think that actually adds to your mental strength. I think people think that, oh, you've got to be mentally happy first too. And I think it's actually incorrect. I think looking after your physical shape is more important first, because I think that links to you being like, okay, cool. Like I feel good, I look good, and I'm ready to keep going, and I feel better about myself. I think physicality is more important, in my opinion.
I 1,000,000% agree with you, even when it comes to mental health. I think it's
Yep.
hard
Yeah,
to
I agree
talk
too.
yourself and think yourself out of a mental situation you're in. I think it's a physical, moving your body, taking a walk, as you
Yeah,
said
big time.
earlier,
100%.
working out. You agree with that? I'm big time. People are like, which more important, the physical or the mental? That's a really hard thing. But if I had to
Yes.
pick one, it would probably be to move my body physically. That changes my
For
state.
sure. Definitely. But you just like, if you feel good and you look good and you're happy with the way you're just functioning, I think mentally that's just gonna roll on as well.
So most of the people that watch my show, they may or may not know tennis. In fact, I bet 20% know tennis. But they're all people who they're trying to make their dreams come true. They're trying to figure out how do they win, what really makes them happy. Would getting to the top of something truly make them happy? How do they get to the top? So let's unpack that for a minute. I'm curious as to your insights about this. So you referenced Djokovic, arguably the greatest ever. I'm a Federer guy, but there's something about the mental toughness of Djokovic that strikes me. He can be down two sets, and to watch this guy come back and rattle off the next three sets, you're like, this guy's getting killed the first two sets. There's something about him. And I'm curious as your answer, because you said a god like him, but I think most people would say, talent-wise, giftedness-wise, you can hit shots that even he can't hit, that you're that type of a level of a physically gifted, talented. So, like, let's say someone's listening to this is in sales right now. They're just really good at sales, or they're really. But is the separator, do you think, Nick, when it under pressure, is the love of the game? Like, when you're playing someone like that, what is the difference? He's reached a potential of the most majors ever, and that doesn't seem to have been a priority for you. I'm just curious your insight. Like, what is the difference between, your level of love for the game potentially under pressure and his? Do you feel it when you're playing someone like that? And what are your insights about that? If you were to give someone a lesson about passion to reach their full potential, what would you say?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, we me and Djokovic, we played on the biggest stage in the world. We played on the center court of Wimbledon, in the biggest, probably most historic and biggest event tennis has to offer. And I feel like the one thing in my experience for that 3.5 hours we were on court together was just his. I almost felt the consistency of his work over the course of his career. I felt like, and I didn't like, I felt like I actually. Like from a talent standpoint, I was better at it than him at tennis that day, but I still lost. And I felt as if he didn't do anything unbelievably well that day. He just was super composed, and I could feel as if the whole lifetime of his work was involved in that match. I won the first set and he didn't seem fazed. And as you said, he's been thrown in so many different scenarios, pretty much every different scenario he's been in, and he's come out on top. So his experience. He's been in some like 30 Grand Slam finals where that was my first one. And I felt like his ability to stay in the moment and really trust the process of, this hot-headed Australian's come out hot, but I've been here before and I'm going to steady the ship and I put the consistent work in. I feel like that for me was the biggest difference. His ability to just stay composed and have faith in the body of work that he'd put in for 2 decades. So I feel like that was the biggest separator.
That's exactly why I love this man right there, you guys. What he just did. His level of honesty and frankly humility. It's the thing about you that I didn't see on the surface when I'm like, this dude's cocky, he's out. And then as I've listened to you, and some of our friends have told me, Takes great humility to say what you just said, brother, because I know you're a competitor.
Everyone kind of just sees what they see on the court. And I'm definitely, I'll be the first to admit, like, I'm psychotic and I have an obsessive personality to win and to win dirty. Like, I don't care. Like, I was just taught in my, when I was upbringing, like, losing was not accepted at all. So it was just like, you either win or you lose. There's no like good effort or anything. It's just, so when I'm on court, I'm two different people. I'm super competitive and I do twist the boundaries and I may cross the line on the court, but off the court, I don't really, like, I'm like two different people. It's quite scary.
So, hey guys, as you know, I've partnered up with my good friend Brennan Burchard, who's created the greatest personal development system that has ever been designed, called Growth Day. There's everything from journaling to accountability programs, live messages every Monday from myself and other influencers. There's an opportunity for you to get courses that would cost thousands of dollars completely for free. It's incredible. Go to growthday.com/Ed and check it out. Hey everyone, it's Ed Mylett, and if you know me, you know I'm always looking for ways to live healthier, have a little bit more energy, more vitality in my life. And so if you're like me in that way, I think I've got something exceptional for you, which is Armra Colostrum. This is just not any health trend. It's a breakthrough in natural wellness. Armra Colostrum is a superfood that's packed with over 400 bioactive nutrients. It's derived from sustainably sourced grass-fed cows right here in the USA. And since I started using Armra into my routine, I can tell you I've noticed some actual changes. One is my energy level's way up. My workouts feel stronger, and so is my recovery. Like, they're just more effective. And I got to tell you, there's even kind of a glow people are telling me to my skin. So we've worked a special offer for my audience. Receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmra.com/mylett to get 15% off your first order. That's try, tryarmra.com/mylett. Join me and thousands of others who are making a real difference in their health. Hey guys, if you need to hire, you need Indeed. You know, in all of my businesses, and I've been blessed to have several of them, I've used Indeed now for a number of years. And the main reason I do it is, if you're like me, I don't want to waste a bunch of time interviewing people that aren't qualified for the positions that I have. It's one of the hardest jobs in the world, right? Or they are qualified, but they're not interested in making the move at the given time. And so with Indeed, you have a thing called Instant Match, where they match you with quality candidates within 24 hours. And you're in front of people that want the job, that are qualified for it, and that you probably want to hire. I wouldn't go anywhere else. They've delivered great candidates to multiple businesses that I have right now. So here's what's great. Listeners and viewers of my show, you get a $75 sponsored job credit right now to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mylett. Just go to Indeed.com/Mylett, which is M-Y-L-E-T-T, right now. And you can support our show by saying you heard about Indeed here. That would be great, by the way. Indeed.com/Mylett. Terms and conditions apply. You need to hire. You need Indeed. Do you saying there, though, if someone's listening, they're like, I'm going to get a lesson from a dude who's been at the top, but maybe not quite reached his maximum potential yet, is, I want to make sure I understand what you said. Do you think that under pressure at the highest level of business or life, that there's a confidence that came from a dude like him where I've put all this work in behind the scenes, and maybe there's a part of you in your case where you're like, I know he has, and maybe I didn't. And so under pressure, and don't let me speak for you, but under pressure, that was the confidence separator.
I definitely felt that. Like, as in, I put in the work. Like, I was not athletically gifted at all from a young age. Like, not at all. Like, I was overweight. And I constantly felt insecure about, my fitness levels when I was in the academy in Australia, and I wasn't able to, pass any fitness tests. So I knew that I worked extremely hard to get there. But I think what I was thinking about, like, there was a period in my life in 2019 where I was self-harming and suicidal, and I was partying a lot and I was drinking a lot. And I was also competing at the highest level, against, there was a night where I was out till 4 a.m. against Rafael Nadal, and it was a pretty dark time. So I felt like, for me, it was just a bonus to get to that point. Like, to make the final at Wimbledon against Djokovic was like a bonus. For him, it was just like, I was just another ant, like, in his journey to chase a legacy and be one of the best players to ever live. Where for me, like, getting there was already the bonus. You know what I'm saying? Like, everything after that year was just like, I made it out of that such a dark period of my life that now I'm like, I'm in the finals of Wimbledon. Like, this is what, like, being getting yourself out of a big mental struggle can lead to. Where for him, it was just like he was chasing, like, not every person and every athlete can be like the greatest of all time. That's just not how it works.
You're on the area I want to go. I think this is the part of the interview, everybody, where you share it, what we're about to talk about. I think this is where Nick helps people in ways that most people don't give him enough credit for, which is I want to talk about mental health with you and pressure. So I watched that Netflix documentary you're in, and I was surprised you did grow up as a chubby kid, right? Because I see this like dude that's got swag, you know, he's got just this cachet about him. Nick does, the way he moves, the way he talks, he comes across as unbelievably self-confident person. And then as I dug into it, I'm like, wow. And by the way, correct me if I'm wrong about the severity of it, but I'd like you to speak to this for a minute. You actually have struggled with mental health to the extent where, like, you actually had an alcohol and drug thing you think you had going there for a while. Is
Big
it
time.
true that you actually played in Wimbledon after you had harmed yourself, where you had to wear a wrap around your arm in a tennis match because there was some self-harming going on? And what other things have you struggled with? Is that accurate, by the way, what I just said, that that is true? That's amazing to me, bro. That's amazing.
Yeah,
And
it
the world
was.
did
I
not
did.
know that was going on.
No, not at all. Yeah, that was the main thing I felt like when I was playing, like at the top of the sport, and I guess living like an athlete should live at that point. No one really expected me to be going through that. So, yeah, it was hard because I was covered. My right arm was covered on, like, covered with it, and I was playing on center court Wimbledon against Rafael Nadal. And I was like, I can't go out here with my arm looking like this. So I wore like a sleeve to cover it all up. But yeah, like it was such a hard process because I knew how I was feeling internally, and I didn't want to play. And I knew that I was struggling, even just to wake up and go outside was a task. But then I had to, like, kind of just, I had the avatar that I had to live up to as well on the other side of it, where I had to go out there and play. And it was hard. Yeah, it was really, really hard.
Was there a part of you, brother, that you didn't want to be here anymore, that you were suicidal?
Oh, definitely. Big time. I felt like no one, I mean, to this day, people still only really want to talk to me because, Nick Kyrgios, the tennis player, the crazy guy who does all this crazy stuff, the talented person. And it took me a while to understand that that was just a vehicle and one way of communicating who I am as a person. And then I sit down and they get to meet me, and it's cool. But I really struggled with the fact that I felt like how I was all the time, like 95% of the time, wasn't enough. It was like no one really gave a shit about who I was, and what I had to offer just as a normal human. It was only just about that guy that they saw on the court. And, my family started, like, we grew up in a pretty quiet area in Canberra. We weren't rich at all. So it was like, obviously, when I started being successful, my family didn't really know how, to approach things and how to handle things as well. So things got different in my family, and it was just all bit like it was all just a big curveball for me. Like, I wasn't ready to handle that type of success in a way, and the fame. So I really struggled with it. Yeah.
I'm the blessing that I work with several athletes in different sports, golf, MMA, boxers, NFL, MLB. I just working with an MLB guy now. And I got to tell the audience this because Nick is not unique in this, that at the top of everything, even in business, the pressure that comes with that can create or exaggerate mental health issues for a lot of people. It really can. And Nick, I'm sure since you've shared this, you would privately, we would never say who, but I bet other athletes have told you they've struggled with it as well. And it comes with the pressure of doing something great. So a lot of people listening to this, even if they haven't done that yet, they're down right now. They feel isolated and alone or misunderstood or even invisible, right? What would you say to somebody who's going through a time like that or has a loved one in their life who is going through it, which, by the way, I think is the majority of people, not the minority of people. I think mental health is a crisis right now in the world today. What counsel words would you speak to somebody who's just they're just not feeling very good right now?
Yeah, I mean, look, life's hard. It's actually is brutal. And I feel like the one thing I did that made it worse was block people out and try and do it on my own. I feel like as humans, that's not even how we're supposed to function. I think, I blocked out my family. I was very short with my good friends that genuinely cared about my well-being, and I tried to take it alone head on, and it was just worse. It was like I was heading into a storm where the outcome was never gonna be good, and I was in a psych ward in London, and the day before I played Nadal, and I was they wanted me to be admitted into this place for a couple of weeks, and I was like, I can't. I have to play Rafael Nadal in Wimbledon tomorrow. That's how bad it was. And then I proceeded to lose that match. It was very close. I nearly won somehow. And then, I was partying for like 3 days straight, and I was in bed, and my dad sat next to me, and he was full blown crying, saying, I can't see my son like this anymore. Like, it was really bad. And then I basically just, you have to want to fix it. Like, I knew that it was an issue. I knew that I was causing stress on my family, my friends, everyone that cared about me. And I knew that I had to fix my habits. And it started with getting up in the morning, like something small, like going for a walk, like, just like really break it down into how am I going to just change? It's not going to happen overnight. It took me 2 years to reach a level where I wanted to actually wake up early in the morning and go for a walk. Like, it didn't just happen overnight, but fixing my relationship with my family, my friends. I've got an incredible partner now who's super supportive of me, and we have a great relationship. And it stemmed, like, I was in my last relationship, my partner, it was so toxic, and that was also feeding into it. Like, I can't put enough emphasis on the closest five people around you have to be incredibly positive and want the best out of you. And they might make you feel uncomfortable sometimes, in the sense, like, holding you accountable or like wanting you to improve, to a sense of being uncomfortable sometimes. But those are the only people I have around me now. And if they see me slipping back into these habits of doing some drugs or any of this type of stuff, like, every now and then, like, they hold me accountable, because they know that a personality like me can slip back into these dark habits, and it's not fun. So.
Wow, bro, I'm like blown away. This is real. Just so you know, when tennis is over, this is your calling. Like, part of what you should be doing is this right here, impacting people's lives. Because I don't know if you all hear what he just said. He was in a psych ward the night before. He's playing Rafael Nadal. Like, Rafael Nadal, that's insane to me. And so, if he can come from where he did and make improvements, and by the way, I think you'd acknowledge this. I, by the way, have struggled with when to quit something. I'm reading, I'm actually, I can't remember the title of the book, but I'm actually reading a book about right now. It's how do you know when to quit or quitting? And for me, it's physical health. I'm just doing too many things that have impacted my life physically to the point where something has to go away, right? And this is in my life. I'm being real honest with everybody here today. And that's affected, different areas of my life. I wonder if you've navigated that question, like, when is it okay to quit? When is it okay to take a break? And how do you know that? And it's one of the great questions in life, is that we're always climbing for more and more and more. And sometimes I think you have to audit whether your original dream is your dream anymore, and if you're going about it the right way. I'm just curious your thoughts about that. You're
I mean,
smiling.
that's it's just like, I guess that's the common kind of struggle that I guess you've dealt with it. I've dealt with it. And I actually asked, Gary this, Jay Shetty this, Gordon Ramsay, all of these amazingly successful people that have insane work ethics, by the way. Like, and I go to them, do you ever just like sit back and actually just pause for a second and see what you've achieved and what you've done? And none of them like say, like, no, they just do it, and then they don't even like have time to appreciate what they do. They just go to the next thing and they do it. And I'm just like, and I sit there internally and I'm like, man, that's just like, when's enough enough? As in, like, you've probably got enough money to be good for your future generation. It's just like, now, like, but you just, there's something inside you. I'm sure it's the same with you. You just want to like you want to wake up tomorrow and keep going to the gym. Like, you want to stay motivated. And I just don't know, like, if work-life balance exists. Like, I don't have the answers for this question, because it's like, well, the more successful or the more things I achieve or the more things I'm able to dabble in, and I want to do more. And it's just like, I don't know. It's an addiction. I'm not sure. I don't have the answers for it, so I can't help you with that one.
Well, I'm
But as I'm
addicted to the
learning,
expansion of my being. I'm addicted to the expansion of my being. I don't even think you have to have the answer. The reason I asked it to you is I think it's powerful to ask yourself the question, though, and just contemplating in your life, is this where I want to be? Is this what I want to continue to do? And I think that's a healthy thing. I think sometimes we think it's a weakness to ask. It's a weakness to inquire. I'm 53 years old in a month. I've made, lots of money in my life. I've had the ability to achieve a lot of different things. There is a point in your life where priorities change, And I don't, and it's just worth checking in with yourself. Are these still my priorities? I think is the question. And it's different for every single person. And I wanted to ask you that today because it's something that I know a lot of people ask themselves. It's true in the relationship they're in. It's true in the business they started. It could be in a sport that they're in. I get asked this by athletes all the time. And you don't want to ever get outside of something and go, man, I could have gotten more out of that. I regret I didn't go a little bit more.
Yeah.
Right? There's a part of that. There's a part of me, though, that I've also struggled with as I've climbed higher and higher. There's been a, I think I just, I'm the son of an alcoholic. And so I think I've always struggled with a little bit of imposter syndrome in the sense that I'm sort of, do you?
Yeah, just I'm like I never feel like it's very strange for me to even be talking to you or something. Like I don't feel as if I don't take myself seriously at all in the sense like I just, yeah, I feel like every time I'm in a room with someone that's, you know, have achieved something great or like I don't feel like I deserve to be there either. I don't know. It's a weird feeling.
What do you think it comes from? Being a heavy kid? Do you think it's how you grew up?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the only reason I ever wanted to start playing tennis and become one of the best was just to show that an average person like me, like an overweight kid that lived in Canberra, Australia, was able to go out there and beat some of the greatest of all time. That's all I wanted to show. I just wanted to show that an average person, like if you really just put your mind into something, you can do it. That's it. That was my goal.
Sabotage yourself a little bit with that belief, Nick? Like, do you think there's been some sabotaging unconsciously that took place either whether your preparation or something on the court or just a thought when you're out there, if you're being honest, that affected your performance based on that imposter syndrome?
I think so. I think if I was a bit more like, honestly, if I was a bit more selfish and I was a bit more like, I guess, more orientated to doing the best for my career and my training and not like helping other people or being there for others as much, I definitely feel like I could have had way more success in my career. But that success doesn't outweigh for me the success. Like yesterday, 2 days ago, I had a foundation day in my hometown and there was over 1,200 kids in my like tennis center that I grew up in. Like for me, that success outweighs the success of winning a Grand Slam because and being more selfish and being more like involved in my own career. Because one of the best things when I opened up about my self-harming and my suicidal thoughts was the amount of people that message me on social media that I've, you know, got their numbers now, I stay in contact with, I call them. And it's like that for me has been the most powerful thing in my career. It's not about the trophies. It's about, and that's my point. I think that's the answer of why, when are we going to stop? When are we going to quit? I think you shouldn't because of all these things that you're doing and achieving and your platform and you're growing, your being, you're just spreading your awareness of helping others. And I think that is for me, like, that's what keeps me going, to be honest. Like me being able to show up for 2 hours at a tennis center and kids are going crazy and gets them to want to be active and play tennis. And who cares about if they're good or not? It's the fact that they feel like they mean something for that little period of time.
Hey guys, so I've been talking about Babbel for a long time because to some extent they've actually changed my life. And the reason is, like you, I wanted to learn a second language. I think everybody should speak a second language. And I learned Spanish in high school, but I couldn't speak it fluently. And it was an outcome of mine last year. And I can tell you, a year later, I've made a ton of progress. I was recently in Mexico. I was having really conversations with people who are telling me they were impressed with my Spanish. And 100% that's because of Babbel, because the way you learn to speak a new language is in total immersion. The lessons are 10 minutes long. You can start really speaking the language better in about 3 weeks because they're crafted by about 200 different language experts. So whatever languages you want to learn, you can start slowly but make progress quickly with Babbel. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 50% off a one-time payment for a lifetime Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/mylet. Yeah, get 50% off at babbel.com/mylet. That's spelled BABBEL.com/mylet. Rules and restrictions apply.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
The first of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
I had Deion Sanders on a few weeks ago, Coach Prime. and he was talking about a stage of his life where he was suicidal, believe it or not. I mean, maybe the greatest defensive player to ever play football, right? And he was talking about, you know, he had everything he wanted. He had a bunch of money. He had, you know, the mansion. He had this success. He had all these things. And he said, and then I just was miserable. And I said, the power in sharing that, and this is a lesson for everybody, as I said, in life, we're most qualified to help the person we used to be. And if you're willing to share, this is who I used to be, or even I'm him sometimes still, but I'm I'm a work in progress. Being willing to reveal your imperfections with people 100%. Is what really connects with you. And to be honest with you, I'm a big fan of Federer. I'm a big fan. I loved Bjorn Borg when he played, and you know, I'm a huge tennis fan. But there's something about you and your vulnerability and your authenticity that connects me with you differently. Yeah. That they're not, you're not Superman. You're a real man.
No, I'm not. Yeah.
And to me, that you've stumbling on to the greatest part of your life right now, bro. And the other people that are listening to this, if you're willing to be vulnerable and authentic with who you really are, whatever you really believe in, whatever you really stand for, whatever your fears are, your weaknesses, your failures, your shortcomings, you're going to find that the more you reveal that, the more you connect with people and the more that you can help them.
And the more that you improve as well, like you improve, like there's no, like I go into places sometimes and the person I'm in the room with can be rich, powerful, whatever, famous, but they're not willing to even just admit where they have flaws. And I just know, like, he's stunting the growth of becoming more of who he is as a person. And I just, like, I love it. Like, when I'll be the first, like, people think, like, I love it. For the first people think that I'm, like, super confident all the time, like, whatever, all these great things. And I'm like, bro, they're like, that's not me at all. Like, this is what I'm good at. These are my points where I can improve on. And that's how that's how you connect with people. And that's why I love doing these things now, because I think people are starting to understand that I'm completely different for how, you know, the image has been painted out for so long.
The thing that worries me is when you have somebody who's already struggling with their self-belief. This is you here. I want you to talk about this. So you're already struggling. Like, when I was coming up in business, my main struggle was working on me to the point where I believed in myself enough so that I could achieve. I always say that your identity, and I've watched this with you, brother. I think you'll relate to this. Your identity, your self-worth, the things you really truly believe about yourself, it's like a thermostat setting on your life. So, like, in the theater right now in my studio, it's 72 degrees in here. And what happens in life, that if your results start to heat up past what you believe in yourself, so you get 80, 90, 95, you subconsciously turn the air conditioners on of your life and cool it back down to what you believe you're worth. Mm. And I really believe in your case, like, this is a man with 150 degrees worth of ability and potential, but there's this kid in there still that sometimes is at 72 and 75 degrees, and that thermostat setting comes back on. So I spent most of my time working on that. I still work on it. And when you lump on to that person who's already struggling, so it's a lot of people listening to this, they're already struggling with their self-belief, and then they have criticism. Hmm. In your case, like, flat out haters. So that combination is like, for me coming up, it was the worst possible comment. I'm already trying to increase my thermostat setting. I'm not one of these naturally confident guys, right? So I'm already working on that. And then you heap onto me some form of criticism. It was like massively difficult combination for me.
Yep.
And then in your case, it's public criticism.
Yes,
so how do you deal with that, brother? Because you're already struggling internally as this guy who's like, man, I'm this heavyset kid. I'm from a regular place. I'm an average dude. And then now there's criticism and haters. Educate us on how you have tried to deal with that and what advice you would give to any human being who's dealing. It might even just be their boyfriend or girlfriend. Like, you can't do this. What's wrong with you? Why are you trying to change?
Like, it could be family, could be anyone close to you. I mean, like, I don't think my family genuinely believed that I was going to be one of the best tennis players in the world from, like, I don't think it's realistic. Like, they weren't programmed to think like that. And that's why we do achieve, because there's a part of us like, oh, what if? Like, what if we do push the boundaries a little bit? What if we do, you know, ask the question? But I mean, this day and age for me is very hard, because, like, I'm a bit old school in the sense, like, social media and all of these things that are happening now. Like, for me, like I wake up and I can go on my Instagram and I see thousands of negative comments, and, like, I don't really take them personally, but subconsciously they're going into my head. And when things get tough, like when I'm about to do this gym session, like in here, it's like we go to the point of failure. It's like I start thinking about, oh, like, am I this? Like, it beats you down so much. Like, that's what I struggled with in 2019. Like, it got to a point where I actually started believing these comments, and then I started hating myself. And like, I was waking up in Shanghai playing a tournament at like 3 p.m. I played night, and I would literally was waking up to like alcohol. Like, I wasn't even drinking. Like, it was just to the point of like, I hated myself. And I started just believing all these people. I didn't even know what these people look like, but I started believing the comments. And now I have to seriously, like every day, really invest in just like not feeding into and not even trying to read it, and just trying to like self-affirmations, like trying to tell myself like I'm a good dude, like I train hard, like I really put an effort in that. And people will maybe watch this and say like, oh, I'm not gonna do that, but it goes such a long way. But now I wake up, I try and like, you know, just that, like have just positive words, because words can kill people in this day and age. That's how brutal it is. Like, I've seen people like commit suicide just because of what someone said to them, and what they see on social media, and these all this comparison, and it's really bad.
By the way, I want everyone to hear that. Words can kill people. I can tell you definitively in my work, because of all the messages that I get from different people around the world, that is a fact. Please extend more kindness to one another. Please be careful of heaping criticism on to somebody, deserving or undeserving. You could be contributing to something so harmful in somebody's life.
Yeah.
And I strongly urge everybody just to extend a little bit more grace and a little bit more kindness to people. Brother, your work is profound, what you're doing now. And I'm wondering, in your career, if you look back, since you're so honest, is there something particularly that you're proud of? And is there something particularly that you really regret? What's the thing you're really, really proud of? And then what's the thing, if you looked back so far, that you regret?
I'm proud of the way I've been able to provide for my family and my friend, like my friends and my partner. Like, that's, for me, I think as a man, that was my main goal. Like, when I was young, I watched my family struggle with bills. We had no money to kind of do anything. And now I'm able to, you know, make them all, you know, enjoy their life. And then there's no stress of that. And everyone's just, I think, really happy in my household. And when I take my friends out to dinner, I'm very lucky that I'm able to take care of them, and my partner lives a great life. So I think for me, that's what I'm most proud of. I'm most proud of that. I've taken the pressure off my family. That's like, and I feel like that's what you should be most proud of. Like, everyone that's really like out here grinding and waking up early and doing this, like, that's the main goal. It's like, that's what people are hating on social media, that they probably can't, they're not able to take care of their people like you take care of your people. And that's what I've broken it down to. It's like, how can someone call me like any sort of names, or you didn't achieve this, you didn't do this? It's like, bro, I'm able to take care of my people the best I can do. Like, that's so sick. And regret, I mean, I've thought about this for so long, like, or things I would do differently and change. But I think the more I reflect on it, I don't think I regret anything in my career, because I think the person I am today, and as you said, like, I'm transitioning and stepping into the best part of my life now, with all my hands in different sort of areas, and it's not just tennis, and it's really exciting, and I'm waking up with all different types of stimulation. I'm here talking to you, and it's just so cool. And I don't think if anything changed prior to this moment, I don't know if it would be the same. So I don't think there's time to regret anything. I think, like, you can say like, oh, maybe that wasn't the right decision and I didn't move in the right direction, but I don't think you would take that away, because I've f***ed up so many times, and I've made the worst decision possible. Not even a bad decision, like the worst possible decision in at times. And I'm still managed to navigate through all of it and be here and you know, have good habits now. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think I regret anything, to be honest.
The other thing that people deal with is, by the way, what a great conversation. Like, I'm really grateful we're doing this. I'm really, really, really grateful. All these years I've watched you, and then I introduced you this way, and I mean it. There's a depth and a dimension to you that's really compelling. And I'm just really impressed with you. The other thing that you've had to deal with, that people deal with in different ways, and this is a real thing in life, I did, it's other people's expectations. So, like in my case, I went to college, and I remember when I decided to become an entrepreneur, the disappointment kind of on my dad's face initially. Like, he loved me, but it was almost like he was so worried for me, you know, that I had made this particular choice. So it was the expectations, almost like I had disappointed my dad with the choices that I made. And I just, you know, I never wanted to disappoint. It wasn't that my dad was a hater, by no means. It was, I think in life, sometimes you have to distinguish between people who are genuinely concerned for you, even if they're wrong, and someone who's antagonistic towards you, right? In my dad's case, he wasn't antagonistic. He's my dad, but he was certainly concerned and disappointed. And I remember thinking, man, I've my dad's expectations, I've let him down. I think a lot of people, their spouse has certain expectations, their family has certain expectations, their friends are used to them being a particular way. And man, in your case, I don't know that there's been a lot of athletes that had more expectations poured onto them than you.
Yep.
And that's something really to deal with, to escape that, to navigate that. It's one of the keys to becoming a blissful human being. Is other people, it's almost like, in your case, I think no matter how much you had won, people would have expected more winning, right? It would never be enough. So how do you recommend people deal with other people's expectation? And am I right that you had to deal with that?
I think you never can please anyone. I guess everyone's going to know this. Like, everyone's going to have opinions. Like, in my eyes now, I think I've had a really good career. Like, there's only been a couple hundred human beings since the beginning of time that I made a Grand Slam final. And like, if I look about the chances of me doing it, it was so slim, and now I've done it. So like, I'm not going to sit here and talk about achievements and stuff, but I feel like, I wake up still to this day and I haven't achieved enough. Or curiosity is the biggest waste of talent to ever touch a tennis racket. Like that's something that I've literally dealt with every single day for the last 15 years of my life. Like since I touched a tennis racket and I was on tour, I continually deal with it. So you just have to go back to the basics and think like, am I trying to still move in the right direction? Like, yes, I'm trying to train hard. I'm trying to eat well. I'm trying to maintain a level of lifestyle where I'm even going to improve. I'm still looking to improve in different areas. And it's hard because I know that my family wants me to continue to play for a couple more years and have a year where I'm competing for Grand Slams. Like, I know that my fans want me to win the Grand Slams, and I know that if I look myself in the mirror, like, my chance to win a Grand Slam is slim. It's possible. But if I don't win a Grand Slam, I've already had a conversation myself. I'm okay with that. I know I'm a good person. I know that I try my best in like helping other people. And if I don't win a Grand Slam, that's fine. I'm not going to let that define me. But I know that I've already accepted that people are going to be disappointed. Like, if I don't win one, everyone around me will be disappointed. And it's just, you just have to be okay with it. Like, as long as you're okay with the path you're on, that's all that matters. Because I already know that at the end of my career, there's going to be a lot of disappointed people.
That's a really profound thing. I'm on this thing right now I'm speaking about. And I think of certain people when I describe this, and you're one of them. I have this theory that the reason, I always say conformity is the, I didn't make this up, by the way. I heard it somewhere years ago, but conformity is the ultimate form of cowardice, meaning conforming to what the world expects you to be a particular way, is sort of a cowardly approach to life. And I think we're taught this as kids to kind of color within the lines. You know, that was one of the things you're taught in school. And I'm talking a lot about this on stage right now. Color within the lines. Don't go outside the lines. That's a bad thing. And I remember I'm so uncoordinated and I'm left-handed that I could never color like the other kids. I was always outside the lines a little bit. You look at old pictures of me in like kindergarten, it's like, my gosh, it's terrible. And as I've gotten older, I'm like, actually, that's one of my great traits is I don't color within the lines. I've decided to have a life that doesn't color outside within the lines like everybody else. And if you think about someone in sports who is not always colored within the lines, and maybe sometimes to his own detriment, but it's you. I want you to talk about it, 'cause like, are you intentionally that way? You think you were born like, I'm not a conformist. I'm not. Yeah. And a lot of hate comes with it. A lot of criticism comes with it. But you are really a dude who does not color within the lines in your life. And I think that I actually think those are usually the people in life we admire. Martin Luther King didn't color within the lines, right? He didn't color within the lines. You think of someone that's a hero of yours, whether you're a person of faith, like, didn't color within the lines. They went outside of what everybody's expectations or what the norm is. They weren't part of the pack. People in the pack seem to never really accomplish very much in life. So I just wondering your thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, you asked me, do I intentionally try to color outside the lines? No. Like one of my childhood friends, like we literally grew up since 7 years old from my hometown, and I was exactly the same way at that age that I am today. The way I play tennis, I'm on the court, I'm very emotional. I wear my heart on my sleeve, like emotions. Like I used to cry on court as a little kid, like when I was losing, like I was always very emotional on court. And I guess someone like me, I was already against the eight ball, you know, with tennis. Tennis is a very white, old, traditional like sport where it's very respectful. It's a gentleman's game. People used to wear vests on court. And I feel like if I was thrown into like an NBA sort of team, or, you know, we have rugby in Australia, like I would be probably one of the nicest guys on court. I wouldn't like do anything crazy. I'd probably curious would be like, oh, he's like, he's a softie. He's not one to worry about. If I played any other sport, because it's tennis, it's like, oh, this guy is an abomination, because I walk differently and I dress differently and I speak differently and I wear a red Jordan hat at Wimbledon. It's like, oh my God, this guy is, he's a criminal. So it's right. I guess I was always seen to be a person that really is against the grain, which I am. I'm not, I wouldn't say I'm like, I'm a rule breaker for sure, but I'm not like someone who's crazy. Like there are people in Australia who will just walk past me and they'll be, their mouth will be on the ground waiting for me to do something crazy. Like that's how bad this whole media thing has gotten. They think that I'm a nutcase. Like they'll just look at me and be like, do something crazy. But no, I think me playing tennis and the way I am, that created the kind of thing that I was just like, I wasn't even coloring the page they want me to color. I was doing something else.
I think that's why you can actually make mistakes and not have regrets. I think the regrets at the end of the life is someone who just colored within the lines the whole time and goes, man, I blew it. I never found out who I was.
They're scared to take the chance. They're scared to do something that is against the grain, because that's where the best things happen in my life. Like nothing good in my life has actually come and by like sticking to a plan that someone else gave me. Like I made the decision of doing something crazy or like doing something spontaneous or instinctively. That's where all my best success has come. And that's just, I don't know if it's a dangerous word of advice for everyone to do it, because I think like it doesn't work for everyone too. Some people need to be measured and have a nice plan and have goals. I think that works as well. But for my personality, my best moments have come just doing things instinctively.
Okay, two more things. Last two things. The other thing people don't know about tennis, and I watched you in that Wimbledon when you ended up in the finals against Djokovic. I just wanted to be in. I wanted to ask you this while I was watching it. So the other thing most people don't know is you have a team in a box that's up there, right? And even in matches that you were winning, I was watching you sort of like, I thought, at least it looked to me like kind of yelling up there at him a little bit, right?
Giving him some.
Yeah, I was wondering, is that what you're doing? Are you trying to fire yourself up? Are they giving you instructions that you don't want? Like, because people that usually win have a team. They may be in their office, maybe somewhere else, but like yours is like right there in the box. You just, you know, you didn't win a game, or you missed a forehand or the backhand.
Yep.
And I'm watching you, and other players seem to be like kind of calm when they're doing that. That's their formula. You look like were you yelling at them, yelling at yourself? Like what's happening then with you and your team?
I'm very talkative on the court. Like other players, they don't like to talk. They like to get in their zone. But for me, an outlet of pressure is having conversations with people that I know I've put in like a decade of work in, and their insight to me is very important. Like I don't always like to, if I'm in the heat of the moment, they might see something from that view that could be worth something to me. So I'll always ask them like, say something to me, like, as in like what you're seeing, like just say anything. It could be anything to just take my mind off what I could be missing something. And then like at times, like I'm just talking just an outlet pressure. Like I'll say something that's not even relevant to tennis, and they just look at each other like, why is he talking about that right now? They're like, this guy's got serious mental issues on the court. And then we get off the court, they're like, you're nuts. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm so sorry. Like that wasn't even me. I don't even know who that person was. But these are my childhood friends and my agent now. Like we went to school together. You know, my physiotherapist, we've been, you know, working together for almost 11 years. He's in the gym with me every day. like, these are my people that we've literally like created this whole journey with. So like, I just want to win so bad, not only for me, but for them too. Like, I want my whole team to, and then ultimately the better I do, the better that they do as well. So it's like, I just want us all to have success basically.
I love you. This is so good. So a couple things, guys. Follow Nick on social media. He's also got a new show out that he's doing. What's the name of the show, Nick?
Good Trouble. It's called Good Trouble.
Good Trouble. Good Trouble. Check that out. He's already had
it fit right in.
Yeah, I'll be on there for you, brother. And he's got a bunch of great guests on there already that he's been telling me about. So go check that out. Last question. I got a friend named Tim Grover. I'm sure you know who Tim is. You work with Jordan and Kobe. And I've had other athletes, and athletes will ask me this. In fact, I just had a UFC guy here last week, and he's like, you know, I'm debating whether to, I'll call it the Evander Holyfield, come into the ring in peace and worship music's playing, and I'm going to leverage the light. That's my motivation, my dream, the light, my vision. Or am I coming in there like Kobe or, you know, the Black Mamba, but I'm going to leverage what Tim calls the dark side, almost like leveraging pain, going to that dark place to win. I'm curious, in your case, what works for you and what you would recommend to other people. Are you more of a, like, chase the light and the thrill of victory type guy and the vision if we win the dream? Or are you, like, kind of leveraging that dark stuff? I'm a fat kid. They don't think I've got this. Yep. You know, I'm the guy who always screws off. I'm the guy who doesn't reach his potential. I'll show you, blah, blah, blah. Which one do you leverage?
I mean, I think I definitely get more into a competitive zone if I'm thinking about the dark energy that's been thrown my way. I kind of like, I love proving people wrong, and I love, you know, spoiling someone's day or really trying to, you know, play that villain role, going out there in front of, you know, I played Roger and I played Rafa, I played Novak, and I was always the villain. Like, I played them all around the world and I never had the crowd on my side. So I guess I've kind of been thrown into that energy already. I didn't really have a choice. So I had to hone in on, like, no one in this stadium wants me to win. Like, there's 50,000 people in there all chanting Roger's name, and I got goosebumps for him. So I'm like, that, I'm going in there and I'm going to, like, I'm going to screw this story up. So that's how I am, big time.
I got news for you, man. The more people see these interviews, that's going to change. And they're going
to
be rooting for you.
I don't want to. I
know
to
you don't.
Like,
I know. You're going to have a problem because you're too likable and you're too good of a man. Who's the GOAT? Federer, Djokovic, Borg, Nadal. You got to pick one, man. You can't.
I don't know if you want me to answer this, bro. It's not.
I want you to answer it. I want no. I want the real truth. Who is
Novak? It's Novak Djokovic.
Novak is. Yeah. And you play against all three.
Yeah.
What's that?
I know that you're a Federer guy, but it's Novak.
It is Novak. Okay, everybody, you heard it here first. That's going to make a TMZ Sports for sure, right there. But I always wanted. You've been on the court, so you would know. You've played against him. For me, in terms of helping people, you're the new GOAT of tennis because you're contributing to people's lives. And I want you to get healthy physically. I know mentally you're improving and growing, and and I'm here to help you any way I can. When we get offline here, I'm going to give you my number. And, man, I love you. I'm impressed with you, and you made a big difference in people's lives today, bro.
Thank you. We did it together. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, everybody. God bless you. Max out your life. Share this episode.
This is the Ed Milet Show.